All right, welcome back. We're going to start on time because we have a packed session.
Dr. Deborah Schwinn, part two.
The first thing I'd like to
do Monday afternoon.
John
Human Flourishing, Reflect, Live, Trust.
IV staff point person for this track. And I'm going to let him introduce the number of IV staff members that are participating and have helped to make this happen.
Great. Yeah, mainly I wanted to be sure that you knew that there were some university staff among you. Not that that's all that really important, but mainly so that if there's something that you need that we could help you with, please, you know, use us. We're here to serve you. You've met Kathy Cooper. Kathy, did you introduce yourself this morning? I came in a little bit late from the manuscript study. Did you tell a little bit about yourself and what you're doing on campus?
Just that I'm working at Brown University with graduate and medical students. But add to that, I'm currently teaching at Brown University with graduate and medical students. So if any of you are in New England outside of Boston, I'd love to meet you.
Great. Okay, thank you. And then Brian Pugh is a staff worker down in Nashville. Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself and your connection to medical students and the medical field and healthcare field.
I'm new on staff at Vanderbilt University with the medical and nursing schools. And my primary in the field was my wife was a pulmonary critical care fellow.
So. Great. And Brian's been there for, what, six months?
6 months.
Yep, great. And I work with medical and dental students in Detroit. So yes, we still do have healthcare in Detroit, despite auto woes. Jeez, that's a really convenient joke these days. I can make all kinds of jokes about Detroit. It's probably not good. It's sad, actually. I've been working with medical and dental students for about 10 years, so I may be the most tenured university medical and dental person around the track. So if you need some wisdom about how to help your healthcare-related fellowship flourish, I may have some ideas at least on what not to do or and a few things of what to do. Also significantly, just so you know this about myself, I have a big family. I have 6 kids. So if you're inclined to grow your brood to exponential numbers, I'm your person to talk to about how and why you should do that for the glory of God, because it's a great calling and it's an opportunity to recover a great deal of lost ground for Christians. Yeah, Kathy.
I also wanted to say, he's not back from lunch yet, but Hans Franzen is on staff and he's in this track and he's also a marriage and family therapist. So for any of you that are in behavioral health, you might enjoy talking
with him. Great. Great. Thanks, Kathy. Thanks, Deborah.
I've given John by email a summary of the lectures that we're doing in this track and also the reading list, because I'm not sure those were distributed ahead of the conference. And so he will be getting those to you at some point later today, so you don't have to worry about taking notes on who the speakers are or what books we necessarily recommend. You'll have a nice list. And they'll be given to you in time that if you want to buy a few of those books upstairs on the 7th floor, you'll at least have the list from each of the speakers. Okay? So you think by tonight at some point?
I'll run up there.
Oh, okay. So you might even have it on your computer by the time you finish today. All right, great. So I'm going to finish just a small section of my talk. And it looks like we have a few more people that we're waiting for. So I'm going to actually wait for this question I had as a first question. And we'll do that at the very end here. And just to take up from where we were yesterday, what I am bringing it with this talk is the concept of roots and nourishment. And when we finish this, we're going to move on to wholeness and caring, and I'll give you the individual titles for our other speakers today and a little bit more about them at that point in time. So I want to just remind you that what we focused on yesterday really was quite a bit on reflection, solitude, and listening to what God has to say to us. And hopefully you've done your practice and you have had a chance to experience that in a very small way. I want to remind us in this that our spiritual life is really a gift. It's a gift of the Holy Spirit who lifts us up into the kingdom of God's love. And this is really another thing, a point that Henry Nouwen makes that I think is just very strong. It's not something to wait passively for. It does require discipline, disciplines of solitude and taking time. And then I think it's very important to reiterate that the discipline of community, where we have people holding us accountable, is very, very important. This is not something to be done just in isolation. And I thought these definitions were quite interesting. Absurd lives can be described as being deaf to God. Absurd, actually the Latin word surdus means deaf. I thought that was very interesting. Obedient lives mean listening to God, and the Latin word there means actually listening, from the root that obedient is driven from. And so I think the spiritual discipline needs to move slowly from absurd to obedient lives. I mean, a lot of us, myself, currently, we have to really fight from being deaf to God to really open ourselves and listening. Now, because I'm a physician and because I do cardiac work, I've seen an analogy in electrophysiology. So I want to point out to you that if you look at some of these tracings, and these are electrophysiology tracings, so they're changes in the actual ground state of a cell, so you're moving the membrane potential with these. I would say the human effort is rather busy and it lacks reflection, whereas God-centered effort is much more limited, it has more effective action, and if you actually take a magnifying glass, you can see that the true baseline here, and this is obviously just an analogy, is what I would say is what the refilling and the quiet that produces. So each beat then is more effective, and we don't have to have clamor and have so many. So the result then is sometimes leaps of faith. I think if we're listening to God, he sometimes asks us things, to do things, to take steps, to speak to people, to take an action that we have to really trust and do. It's a real leap of faith. And many distinct paths can be walked. I think sometimes these can be lonely, they can be scary. It may be sharing Christ with someone who you've never talked with about it, maybe a colleague, where there's a taboo in talking about some of these things, but in the private of your home or inviting them into the warmth and they ask questions, then you've opened the door and God will ask us to walk through that door. But a community, and this is, again, I want to focus on this, a community is absolutely needed. The question is not where is God leading me as an individual, but really what does God lead us to as a community? And we're a part of that individually, of course. But I think calling a ministry means that we consider all kinds of ministry, even as busy as we are with our healthcare lives. Okay, whether you're a graduate student, whether you're actually active in the hospital or in outpatient clinics or in other kinds of healthcare settings, it's important to really take time and to minister also. And you can do that simply with neighbors, you can do it with your patients, you can do it with, you can join groups like Stephen Ministry. I spoke about that last night a little bit. And I love the Stephen Ministry phrase, we are caregivers, God is the cure giver. So even in a Stephen Ministry, we're very acutely aware that it's God that's healing, not us. In academic settings, there are graduate students and colleagues and administrative leaders. We touch people in ways we really don't know. We had an au pair once for our children, and we didn't have so much of a spiritual conversation with her, but we had a conversation about viewing life, being with a glass half empty or the glass half full, because this particular au pair came from a country, and she was a minority in that country, very much a minority, and she came very cynical. And we didn't want our children to become cynical through her interactions. And so we really challenged her on that. We said, look, you know, you've got, life is full, you're bright, you're an amazing individual. We'd like our children, at least when you talk with them, focus things as the glass is half full, not half empty. And she just blossomed that year. And at the end of the year, the week before she went back home, she started regressing into her old behaviors, where she was very cynical. And I sat her down and I said, what, you know, you've just grown so beautifully, what's going on? And she said, well, you know, remember that conversation you had? And I'd forgotten all about it. But she'd remembered it and really grown from it. So I think the influence that we have on graduate students, our colleagues, and administrative leaders really goes beyond parallel, and we may not even realize the influence we're having. So being present, being careful about what we're saying, and taking opportunities that God asks us to take, it's really, really important. And then I think even out in the community as business leaders or community members and in business, there are opportunities as well. So it's really a time to be obedient. And I would say in the beginning, solitude seems contrary to community, but and sometimes we may desire to run away from that. But the discipline of solitude asks that we set aside time and space, because that's where God can come and dwell us and equip us to go right back into living. So there are dangers and discouragements in this. Busyness, interestingly enough, you spell it a different way, is business. There's worldly culture. Success and fame sometimes takes us away from this in the wrong ways, with the wrong priorities. There are many human rewards that, if you just work a little harder doing this and not maybe take the time, those are temptations, and discouragement is a real temptation. But I think it's very, very important that we not succumb to those temptations, because I think God is reframing our life in different priorities that are absolutely critical to stay healthy and whole. It's interesting when you look at this, and if you succumb to some of those temptations, the scriptures speak quite clearly about this. In Psalms it says, "Why do you boast of evil, you mighty man? Why do you boast all day long, you who are a disgrace in the eyes of God?" Another psalm talks about, "Here now is the man who did not make God his stronghold, but trusted his great wealth and grew strong by destroying others." And I have a picture here of where we have a beautifully rich city right next to slums. So these are important. In Psalm 52, God says, "Surely God will bring you down to everlasting ruin. He will snatch you up and tear you from your tent. He will uproot you from the land of the living." Now, we may not speak in these kinds of vivid terms, but the realities of not having a rich, filled life by succumbing to some of those temptations that take us away from being with God, I think are very, very real, and they're spoken of in the scripture. So the results of disbelief really are no rest. This psalm is also quoted in Hebrews, which I found quite interesting. It says, "So I declared an oath in my anger, they shall never enter my rest." And I think if you think of burnout, it's misunderstood by modern culture. There's no rest because there's no God. It's turning that pyramid upside down. It's trying to do works without being filled with God as the baseline foundation. So the benefits of belief really, and taking time to really let God fill us, is rest. "My soul finds rest in God alone," is another psalm. "He leads me beside quiet waters." We talked about that last night when we read through that. Matthew 11 says, "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest." And I think this picture with just the calming waters is really symbolic of just some of that refreshing waters. The characterization of a righteous man says, "But I'm like an olive tree flourishing in the house of God. I trust in God's unfailing love forever and ever." So you can see, and it says, "I will praise you forever for what you have done. In your name I will hope, for your name is good. I will praise you in the presence of saints." So I would urge you to pray to overcome discouragement. I thought this was a cute little cartoon that represented that. Stop right there. I see a glimmer of hope. I hope I'd be appreciated. False hope, okay. This is the picture that I pointed out to you yesterday. It was in the bottom left corner of that foundation piece about refreshment. And it's really a picture of how water over centuries will take the same rock, just one drop at a time, will make huge canyons and crevices. So I think be persistent, relax, realize that small disciplines where we are opening ourselves continuously to God, letting Him fill us, allows Him to then lead us. And I think this was made really profound in the life of Thomas Kelly. He was a man who was gifted. He was a PhD in philosophy. He was a professor at, and I put prestigious Haverford College. I think most people know that's a prestigious small college. But he failed his oral boards for his second PhD in mathematics and philosophy at Harvard, and really saw himself as a human failure as a result. But this man then visited Hitler's Germany in 1938, saw the suffering of the German people, who Hitler was actually leading, but they were not necessarily in step with, other than out of fear. And he really knelt at the Cologne Cathedral and felt the crushing weight of suffering of humanity. And was only really tolerable by God's love. And he writes about this. But his transcendent writings that he did really only were transcended in the next 3 years. So it took this failure for him to then have this crystallizing moment that allowed him then to be able to speak, or for God to speak through him in very new and important ways. So I would say begin where you are. It seems like a long road, but you know the old Chinese proverb where Confucian says every journey starts with one step. Just begin where you are, begin again, and relax. And remember, I will does not spell obedience. So again, we can be tempted to be resisting to be used as God's instruments, as Moses was tempted to do, but he followed God. All of Jewish history would be different if he hadn't. I think it's false humility if we decide we're not worthy to follow the nudges that we hear God saying. We decide that we are unworthy to receive anything from God, so refuse the gift. We convince ourselves that we must first prove worthy of receiving something, so spend our days trying to earn what can only be received. And this is a quote from Margaret Thompson in Soul Feast in her book from 2005. So I think genuine humility is the humility to accept God's gift and to walk out in faith. So service is really being willing to be used by God. So I would say that this quote from a South African pastor who opposed apartheid is really quite apropos here. Lord, make me willing to be used by thee. May my knowledge of my unworthiness never make me resist being used by thee. May the need of others always be remembered by me, so that I may ever be willing to be used by thee. And open my eyes and my heart that I may each coming day be able to do some work of peace for thee. So I think we can do that. You in healthcare, in your lives, in your work, but also in your ministry with others outside. And remember, God is always in control. So I would like to summarize this, and this is a quote from yesterday. Remember, it's not always the way you think it looks, it's reality. But I would like to now ask if during your session that you did with your little homework, the 15 or 30 minutes that you spent by yourself, we have two choices here. If anybody feels nudged to share what they learned during that time, feel free to do so now. And then we will go ahead with our next speaker once we finish that. Is there anybody that felt nudged from what they did during their homework time or their time alone that you feel willing to share? Yes?
Something God showed me was an aspect of kind of informing my image of God is how. It's like, as a parent, if the child's been acting up and done some things they really shouldn't have, that he still enjoys the child being with him afterwards, and spending time with him. And tell me that I was like that, and, you know, if there's some things that they did, you know, done right, that he wishes he was doing different stuff, he still really enjoys and cherishes us both.
Thank you. I think that's a very important lesson. Yes.
I'm starting to remember the importance of prayer. And, in that time of prayer, just coming back to God and being honestly with him, quiet. And remembering that really is an important part of Christian life. Being consistent and also having to be something that is refreshing. And remember the refreshment.
I think you make an important distinction there. It doesn't sound like you were talking to God in prayer, but you were listening in particular. Did anybody have trouble settling down? It's kind of hard, isn't it, initially?
Yeah, I had trouble being quiet. I've never done this before. I know that I needed to, but I've never been quiet because it's so much noise. I always have to be saying something, for example. And so I was like, Lord, teach me how to be still and quiet.
It is a discipline that we have to practice and learn. It's did anybody feel that 30 minutes just wasn't enough? I see some heads nodding. When the Desert Fathers went away, they went away, some of them, for years at a time. took them that long. And when we're quiet, then all kinds of other things bubble up. And a nice technique for that is just to have a little piece of paper that you can write them down and forget them, set them aside. So as they bubble up, you can just put them aside. Okay, well, thank you very much for this.